Now, this evening we have a special guest, but as he is a Quest author with a new release, I have to hand over the honor of introducing him to one of our Quest book editors, Sharon Dorr. You have the privilege, madam.
Thank you, John. You're so eloquent. Thank you. Here is the book that we are celebrating the launching of, Wrestle Four Eagles, The Making of a Healer, Teachings of My Oneida Grandmother. I'm very proud of this book and proud to have worked with Russell on it. Now, I'll read you what the official biography says on the back cover. Russell Four Eagles is a spiritual energy healer with over 40 years of experience. He has performed over 45,000 healings throughout the world. Following his apprenticeship with his Oneida grandmother and his term in the U.S. Army in Vietnam, he began practicing traditional healing work in 1973. Later, he opened the Soaring Eagles Wellness Center in Wisconsin, where he does his work and also sponsors conferences and workshops. He has taught at the University of Wisconsin and speaks at Native American gatherings across the country. But beyond that official speak, I want to say from the heart that it has been a great privilege to work with this special man to bring his knowledge to a larger audience through the book. The legacy of healing that Russell records in it, and he learned from his grandmother, goes back, as he puts it, 200 grandmothers. That's 200 generations, maybe 4,000 years, maybe longer. He represents a way of seeing and knowing on this earth that is all but lost. It's old, he says, which is an understatement. I love his way of understanding and the promise that it holds for us in these fragmented and very frightening times. So thank you, Russell, for your work. Thank you for coming. And please join me now in welcoming Russell Four Eagles.
Thank you, Sharon. The medicine work that I do, the legacy that was passed to me, I was afraid of losing. My grandma said, do not lose this. And the way the world has went in this day and age, everything's technological. It's really hard to find a child apprentice to pass this to. Although, I got to say, my 8-year-old grandson's going to start this summer. Be 204th grandchild, which would be a good thing, I believe. Our way is about, it's about living with the earth, about healing with the earth, using the herbs and the plants and everything that the Creator gives us. Everything we need to be healthy is right outside our doors. Well, maybe not here, but up at Spooner. It's right outside our doors, and it's helped a vast array of people to become healthy, both emotionally, spiritually, mentally, and physically. A little bit about myself, like Sharon said, I'm 202nd grandchild. That's 404 generations, dear.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. And the stuff that was passed down to me came forever back. My grandmother was 78 years old when she had me list the names down of the predecessors to me. And she said there was more, but she couldn't remember. I figured at 78, that was okay. But one of the things she told me was the original creation story, which is fits with what the Theosophical Society is about. I keep getting that tongue-tied. Anyway, in our original creation story, first there was the Creator. There was nothing but void in the Creator. And he sat in that void for eons, thinking, asked, what would I like? He said, I'd like to have children, but before I can have children, I have to have a place for them. And he said, well, how am I going to make a place? And then he thought, I know, and he clapped his hands with the loudest boom that was never heard, because there was nobody there to hear it. Out of that clap came the thunder and the lightning and dust and ice and water, and all them things coalesced. That dust that came out coalesced into suns, and all of those suns had dust left around them that coalesced into planets, and after a while they all cooled down and the crater started seeding life. They started way to the east of planet Earth there, seeding life, and went way to the west of us. When the time was right and the children, the worlds were ready for his children, he began way to the east of us, filling the children up, putting his children on the different planets. And he finally came to Earth. When he got to Earth, he came right up by Lake Superior and he gathered up two piles of red dust. This is a shortened version, by the way. You're going to have to read the book to get the whole story. Anyway, he went up by planet Earth and made a couple of people, poked his finger and made a heart box. And that heart box is the void between your heart, your backbone, and your two lungs. It's a place where we store hurts, pains, and traumas. Now, it's cheap to put that stuff in there, but it's not free. So he gave us the fire ceremony when he realized that we earned this stuff, we're going to hang on to it rather than let it go. Right? But anyway, when he made the first two piles of dust, he also reached across to England, cliffs of Dover, brought back two piles of white dust. He reached over to Africa, brought back two piles of black dust, and then over to China and brought back two piles of yellow dust, made the heart box, and each one of those piles of dust give energy from each half of his body to both piles. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with what a medicine wheel is. Anybody here seen a medicine wheel? You know, familiar with the colors? They're always white, red or yellow, and black. Now you ask most of the Indians who've had boarding schools in their background, you can say, why is that there? And they're going to say, that's because for the sacred directions, north, south, east, and west. But that's not the original reason they were there. The original reason those colors are on there is the Creator told us to honor all of his creations, including your brothers and sisters. So the white is for the white race, the red is for the red race, the yellow is for the yellow race, and the black is for the black race. They're our brothers and sisters. And we've kept it on there from day one. We've never forgot this. That to honor all of our people, that's why when the Europeans landed, they're our brothers and sisters. We welcomed them with open arms. Not enough about that. I haven't had, my people have never had really good luck with our government here. They talk out of both sides of their mouth, you know. But fortunately for us, we've had the fire ceremony. We would be extinct completely if it had not been for the fire ceremony. Having our women and children and people killed, we would have lost that. We would have been ate up by our own grief. But fortunately, we let that go. And now I'm trying to share that with the world, because we all need to be working together as a people. Not just white people or black people or yellow people, but we all need to work together. Mother Earth's in a terrible turmoil right now. Terrible, terrible turmoil. When Columbus landed, guess how much pollution was there? And guess how many Native Americans were here? Anybody can venture a guess?
100 million.
Try 178. That's 3/4 of the people that are here now, and we had zero pollution. But I did notice, I read a book put out by the government said that when Columbus landed, there was only 200,000 of us total. I find that a little humorous. But that's the way it's always been with the government. But anyway, as long as we've been here, we've been stewards of the land. We never considered owning land. We don't own land. We took care of it. And when we were done with it, we passed it to our children. We took care of it in such a way that seven generations beyond us would have the same thing we had or better. We forgot all of that in this society. Seems like everything now is get as much as you can get out of Mother Earth and let her go. It's kind of frightening if you think about it. What are we going to leave for our children? I mean, there's not going to be a whole lot left if we keep on at the pace we're going now. Use Mother Earth up and spit her out. But anyway, that's one of the reasons I wrote this book is because, like I said, my grandmother did not want me to lose this. And never having been sure that I would ever find a child that would be willing to go through the process that I went through. I mean, 28, 30 years of study. It's a long time. Doctor told me once, I don't have any education. I said, oh, really? I said, my goodness. I must not have been paying attention in the first 28 years. It's a lot to carry on, though, is to keep this knowledge alive. Some of my brethren, some of the different tribes, they don't really like that I share with the people. But it ain't ours. It was given to us by God. And God, all he wants for us is to share with everybody. The only thing God wants is for us to love and help each other. How simple is that? It's a good thing, is it not? Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's all God wants for us. He don't want my money. He wants my love. That's it. And I do God's work as a healer. I use the energy and I use herbs. And like I said, I've probably over 48,000 clients now since the book was written, but it doesn't matter. My healings have probably been about 99.9% successful overall. Back in 1978, I was having pain in my bowels, so I went to the VA and they did the scope colonoscopy. Mm-hmm. And they found a tumor about the size of a bottom of a Coke can, and it was growing on a tree stump right here. And it had a root in my right lung, a root in my pancreas, a root in my spleen, a root in my stomach, a root in my kidneys, and a root in my bladder. And the doctor says, you're dead, we can't save you. He says, if we take the main tumor out, we might buy enough time to get your daughter home from Philadelphia. I says, well, I've worked with the VA before. I said, if I wait for you, I'm going to be dead. He says, no, we're going to get you in 12 days. I said, well, I'm going to go home and take care of this myself. Don't you worry about me. And so I went home and did my cancer protocol for 12 days, and I did a medicine lodge. Had a medicine man, Joe Flangbye, come out, and he brought Sitting Bull's sacred healing stone. Since he was the great nephew, they were passed down to him. And while I was in the lodge that day, he put one right on the tumor and then various spots in my body. And I just had my rotator cuff repaired. It had ripped off completely, and so they sewed it up. And while we were going through the ceremony, I heard a snap, and I thought sure that nylon thread they used, it was so hot in there, I thought sure that it had let go. But anyway, they were singing songs, and I passed out, and I came to, it was over, the lodge was empty, and I thought, oh, was not a noise, not a breeze, not a leaf stirring, no traffic noise, nothing. Heck, this ain't so hard to cross over, it's actually kind of easy. And so I sat up in the rocks, they all jumbled together, and Joe said, hey, pass them out. And so I was passing them out one at a time. The one that was on my shoulder, all that was left of it was a little crescent moon. And I passed that out. Oh, you broke that one. And the one that had been on my tumor had a big blood clot in the middle of it. I still got the stone. Because he wouldn't take it back. He said, no, that's got cancer in it. I can't use that healing no more. So he sent me up to Lake Superior on the North Shore up in Minnesota there. And I must have hunted for 7 days till I found the exact shape, thickness, color. It had to be exactly like Sitting Bull's. And, of course, I did the tobacco prayer, thanked the Creator for it, and smudged it up, and I took it back to him. He was happy, he smiled, and then he went back to South Dakota. But he made me do it. The broken one, he said, I can find that one. But he says, the one with cancer, I can't use. But that was only one of the, that was the first time I was terminal 78 in 85 maybe. I developed a tumor on one of my testicles and went and got the biopsies. Boy, them hurt. Whew. Anyway, I got the biopsies and the doctor talking in his medical lingo was saying, you know, blah, 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 this, blah, 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 that, and we've got to get rid of the cause of testicular cancer, which is we got to get rid of the cause of the testosterone. And he went on a little bit, and I said, excuse me, doc, are you talking about the boys? He said, why, yes, I am. I said, well, that ain't going to happen. That ain't going to happen. I'm Native American. I can't give you my parts. And he said, well, then you're dead. And I said, well, if God means for me to die, I'm going to die with all my parts, but I don't think he means for me to die. And I says to the, I said, well, what about radiation and chemo? And he said, if you're not going to get rid of the cause of testosterone, we're not doing nothing, because it's going to kill you in 3 weeks anyway. And I said, well, make me an appointment in 3 months. He said, you don't understand. You got 3 weeks at the most. I said, make me the appointment. I'll be back. So he made the appointment, and I went back 3 months later, and guess what? It was gone. Well, about 5 years went by, and doggone if I didn't develop a tumor on the other side. I was exposed to high Agent Orange when I was in Vietnam. My first day in country, I cut 400 Agent Orange barrels in half with a cutting torch. They didn't even have a mask or anything. I said, ah, that ain't going to hurt you. This is perfectly safe. Go ahead and cut them. I said, yeah, right. Well, anyway, I think that's the reason that I've been terminal four times, is because of that high exposure to Agent Orange. How I got hooked up with flying by is before I got cancer, I'd be walking along and like somebody cut my leg off right here. I'd tip right over. I mean, there was no control, nothing. And I was at the VA and they was trying to figure out how come my legs would just up and stop working. And I run into a Lakota man from Standing Rock, and he's, oh, he said, that's that Agent Orange stuff. You go out and see Joe Flying By. He's Sitting Bull's great nephew. I said, you go see him. He'll tell you what to do. And so I went out there, and he's, ah, you just need 32 sweats. And so I commenced to sweat. I now probably have hundreds under my belt. But he said, after 32 sweats, he said, Agent Orange won't kill you anymore. It'll scare the heck out of you, but it won't be able to kill you. And so far, he's been right. Well, anyway, I got that second tumor on the other side, so I went in to see the doctor. He did the biopsy. He said, I knew it was coming back. I said, you knew I was dead. It was the same doctor. What are you talking about? I said, you know, you had me dead here 5 years ago. He said, well, I knew what would come back. He says, I know, I know. He says, 3 weeks, right? Or 3 months, right? I said, no, let's make it 3 weeks this time. And I went back in 3 weeks, and it was gone again. And he says, I don't know. That must have been a mistake, them biopsies. Of course it was. So anyway, then 2011, I developed a hen-sized tumor on my carotid artery here. One of my lymph nodes had poisoned up and turned into cancer on me. And we found that on a Friday afternoon, wasn't it? And the doctor, he was... Yeah, the doctor was mad at me, wasn't he? He says, you always come get your biopsies and you always take care of your cancer yourself. He says, you going to work with us? I said, well, doc, I don't know. I said, I'm going to drive up to Michigan, up to Copper Harbor, Michigan. Anybody know where that is? That's far north as you can go in Lake Superior, ain't it? And there's a little peninsula out there. So I went out there. I stopped in Spooner from the Minneapolis doctor. Stopped in Spooner, picked up three or four of my friends, and we went up camping. 3:30 in the morning, I got up and I took my tobacco out and I was praying. Because my grandmother taught me, one of the things she taught me in our way was that if you're holding your tobacco up and praying, before the sun comes up and the sky turns red, you can ask the Creator a question and He'll answer you. So I'm up there watching the sun's going to come up over the lake, you know, right over the lake. And I'm praying and the sky turned red. And I said, Creator, this cancer is different. What do you want me to do? And he says to me, well, you know how you've wanted to work with doctors for the last 40 years? I said, yeah. He said, you never work with them? I thought, oh, crap. I felt a little bit like Jesus must have when he said, we're going to crucify you, but it's going to be okay. Huh? You know? So anyway, the Creator said to me, he said, what they're going to do is they're going to cut you from the top of your ear to the bottom of your throat. They're going to get 4 or 5 cancerous lymph nodes out. But the one that's attached to the carotid artery, the big one, they couldn't get out. He says, then they're going to do 45 radiations on you, and they're going to want to do 4 months of chemo. But he said, you'll never survive 4 months. At 3.5 months, you're going to have to stop doing the chemo. He says, you're going to get down to 114 pounds, and the cancer is going to move into the top half of your right lung. I said, well, that's lovely. But he says, you go through that for me, because we need to show them there's a better way to treat cancer. He said, then you're going to go home, and you're going to do the herbs and that protocol I gave you years back, and it's going to go away. And so I went back the next Monday to the doctor. I said, you'll be back Monday. Let me know what's going on. I said, yeah, doc, I'm going to work with you. He said, what? I said, yeah, I am. Seriously. And he said, okay. I said, we're going to do blah, 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 blah. I said, just wait a minute. Before we do anything, would you write down a prophecy from God? And he says, what do you mean? There ain't no such thing as that. And I said, what's going to hurt you to write a few words in the back of your big leather book there? And he says, yeah, I suppose I could. And so I told him just what I told you people, that what was going to happen. And he wrote it down, and sure enough, they cut me from there to there, cut the lining of my throat out. I did the 45 radiations. They burned me just terrible. And then I did cisplatin chemo for 3.5 months. And they called me in for another chemo treatment, and I said, I'm not taking it. The doctor says, we can't give it to you. I just wanted to tell you today that you'll die if I give you another round of chemo. And I said, thank you for that, doc. But I already knew that. So we went through all the radiation, and when was it, October 2012, they sent me home. I was 114 pounds, couldn't stand on my own. Had to have people help me. I mean, I could stand, but I couldn't walk very much in it. We had our fair then, wasn't it? Our fall fair. And I sat around with like 14 blankets over top of me. I was freezing to death, and it was not that cold out, but it was to me, you know. So I went on my medicine, I did my maple syrup and baking soda, and I did my chaga, and I did my turkey tail, and all of the herbs that I use in my cancer protocol. And I was sick with diarrhea and vomiting from the day I started chemo until January of 2013, wasn't it? Yeah, I was sick that long. I couldn't put no weight on. Couldn't swallow because they cut the lining of my throat out, so I had a feeding tube up here. But, you know, you'd pour in 100 milliliters, and 10 minutes later, you better be having somebody get you to the bathroom real quick because it was vacating the premises, I'm telling you. But anyway, then by January, by middle of January, I started to feel a little bit better. I said, oh, there is hope. Thank you, thank you. And the doctor called me up in January, was surprised to find I was still alive. They said, well, doc, I think I'm actually doing a little better. And he said, well, we're going to do a PET scan. So I did this PET scan, and lo and behold, the only cancer was left. I had 3 spots in my lung, little spots, like a pencil eraser in there. I thought, oh, this is good. The doc's going to be excited, right? When I get out of this room, I'm going to go talk to the doctor. And I went in. The doc said, well, doc, what do you think? He said, well, that's pretty good news, but go home. We're going to do another PET scan in 2 months. So I went home, and I went back in 2 months. We did another PET scan. Now, cancer's gone here. Cancer's gone here. Cancer's gone everywhere. Now he's really got to be excited about it being gone, right? No. He said, go home. We're going to do another PET scan in 2 months. I said, wait a minute, doc. You told me when I started treatment, you could have only 2 PET scans a year. And now you're giving me 3 in 6 months? Just go home. So I went home, and I went back in another 2 months, and I got my 3rd PET scan. Again, it was clear. And he says, what the heck did you do? And I said, you know what I did, Doc? And he said, well, how would I got 5,000 clients. How would I know what you did? And I said, go look in the back of your book. And so he looked in the back of his book, and he read it, right? He read it, and he said, how could you know this a year and a half ago, that it was going to turn out like this? I said, a prophecy from God's only a prophecy from God. If it's true, if I'd have died, it would have been a bunch of bullshit. He says, yeah, I suppose it would have. And then he said to me, he said, are you still doing medicine? Still doing your medicine? I said, no. After I got the 1st PET scan when the cancer was almost completely gone, I said, I quit. No, no, he said, I didn't say that right. I said, well, what are you trying to say, Doc? He said, well, I've got a nephew who's got a sarcoma on the side of his head as big as his head. And he said, I don't think he's got much time left, but we've done every bit of radiation, every bit of chemo that we can do, and it's not stopping the growth. And I said, well, I'd be happy to try, you know. I said, it's between him and God. It's not, you know, I have very little to do with it except sending the energy and getting him the herbs. He said, okay, I'm going to make you an appointment for next week, Monday. I said, it takes me 3 months to get in here. What do you mean you're going to make me an appointment for next week, Monday? He said, you don't need an appointment. I want you to bring that medicine down. But he said, bring in a brown paper bag. I said, okay. And so I'm going through there. I feel like a dope dealer, right? I got all these herbs in this bag, and the cops are all over the VA like they are, you know. And I get up there. He wasn't worried about the cops at all. He was worried about the other doctor seeing it. So the 2nd of May, 12, I started on his nephew, and by September 10th, it was gone. I wanted to do one more healing on him, September 15th, but he wasn't there, he wasn't in town. And I talked to a couple of his friends, he went somewhere. I don't know, where the heck did he go? I don't know. So I had my own checkup, you know, because they check you fairly regularly when you've had cancer. And I said to the doctor, I says, I went to do healing on your nephew and he wasn't there. And he says, yeah, he died. I said, what? He said, he died. I said, he didn't have any cancer. He said, no, he didn't die of cancer. He said, he was feeling so good. He went on vacation down to Rio de Janeiro with his cousins and he was all tequila'd up singing on the thing and passed out on a curb singing a song. And before he hit the ground, a taxi came by, hit him in the head and broke his neck. I said, I think it was his time. And I firmly believe, even though he thought he was going to die earlier than that, I think that kid would have suffered for those 3 months suffering with that cancer eating his brain up and would have died at the same exact moment that taxi came by and smacked him. That's just my personal thought. I don't know for sure. But so I thought that was rather interesting. In March this year, they finally released me completely out of the cancer program in Minneapolis. I said, you're done. We're considering you cured. I said, well, don't pat yourself too hard on the back there, Doc. And he says, you don't have to come back anymore, unless you want to. I says, Doc, you're a really nice guy. I mean, I really like you, but if I never have to see the inside of this place again, I'll be more than happy. And I started to turn and walk away, and he said, wait a minute. I said, what's that, Doc? He said, be okay if I bring my family up and you do that genetic thing for the cancer on them? He said, because my nephew is my brother's kid, and my dad died of cancer, and so my nephew, that means I've got them genetics, right? And I said, yes, you do. And I really thought, being a non-ecologist, that would be the last I heard of it. What was it, 2nd of May this year? No, when was it? 15th of May, June, something like that. Anyway, he came, brought his whole family, brought his mother, his wife, 3 daughters, a son, a nephew, and a granddaughter, and they came for healing. Creator was right, teaching them one at a time. And that's what we need to do. I mean, really, the old medicine and new medicine should be working together. It would be such a team that it wouldn't stop. But I don't know if that'll ever happen because of the big pharmy. Do you guys know who I'm talking about? Doctors aren't in charge. The big pharmacy is. You know, it's like, I'll be talking further on this, on the herbal stuff, but Most of our medicine, whether you're aware of it or not, is based on indigenous plants. They take this plant and they smash it, make 1,000 pieces out of it, and they make 1,000 different pills. Don't cost much. This one killed you, this one killed you. Ain't gonna do that one no more. This one's good. This one might be good. Oh, that one killed them. So, you know, they take the different components and they make it. But the thing with our medicine is the Creator made this medicine to work synergetically together. I have a LIMS protocol I worked out. It has, I make glycerides out of it. It has three components the first week and three different components the second week. And they have approximately 200 components that fight against spirochetes and bacteria. I had a doctor from Germany fly in. That was last winter, wasn't it? The reason he flew in from Germany to see me was I had this German client, was in America, and he had Lyme's, and he'd heard about me, so he stopped to see me. And I put him on the protocol, and lo and behold, his Lyme's went away. And so this doctor flew in to see me, and he said, geez, how is it that you're not medically trained, that you as a medicine man can get rid of Lyme's? And I've been trying to fix for 7 years. And he said, what is that about? And I said, well, first of all, doc, you got to be smarter than the bug. He said, what? Them German folks, they don't got a much sense of humor, you know. I said, doc, it was a joke. I said, what's the life cycle of a Lyme's bug? And he said, I don't know. I said, if you don't know the life cycle of the bug, how are you going to kill it? And they said, are you aware that the spirochetes that are in the cyst form have a chemical sensor in that cyst, and they won't hatch until the medicine's out of your body? Did you know that? He said, no. I said, the reason I got rid of it is I used three herbs this week and three herbs this week, and we'll do that for like 12 weeks. And when we do that, switching back and forth, the bugs takes a week to figure out a way around those 200 components. In a week, they can figure a way out. There's a very smart bug. And so when they get all ready to figure out how to get by that, then I hit them with three new ones. Messes them all up, you know. And I said, the life cycle of a Lyme spirochete takes 7 days from the time they hatch to reproduce. The 8th day, they can reproduce. I said, so we're going to be on medicine back and forth for 12 weeks. That should take care of all the adults in the body. Then you got the cyst form to deal with, the babies that haven't hatched. And they won't hatch as long as you got medicine in. I said, so we take 2 weeks off. He said, well, why 2 weeks? I said, well, it takes 7 days to clear the chemicals out of your body from the herbs. I said, well, why another week? I said, because it's a very smart bug. It don't hatch the first day or the second day, probably not the third day, but the 4th day, the 5th day, the 6th day, the 7th day, they hatch. And then guess what? I say, we hit them again. And how old are they? He said, well, they're 4 days old. I said, how old they got to be to reproduce? He said, well, according to you, 8. Why do you think I get rid of my people's Lyme's and you don't? I said, how many components in doxycycline, what you use? He says, 1. And I said, if they can figure a way out around 200 components in 7 days, how long do you think it takes to get around that one component? He says, geez, a few hours. I said, you're right. And you put people on 3 weeks or 3 months on the same medicine, and the bug just mutates around it. You guys familiar where the Lyme's bug came from? It was developed in World War II Germany by one of the German scientists as a biological weapon. Fortunately, by the time they got it developed, we were winning the war, and in late 44, early 45, we captured a German scientist. And he had a little box with him. You know what's in that little box? It's full of ticks. And so as smart as we are as a government, what did we do with him? We took him to the top secret biological weapons base off the east coast of the U.S. called, anybody know? Plum Island. Now things went all well and good while he was developing this biological weapon for 10, 15 years maybe. No, maybe not that long. Yeah, probably. Anyway, in the late 60s, there was a hurricane come through and wiped out Plum Island. Because it was a biological weapons base, everybody but two people died. Now, they thought Plum Island being 20 miles from shore, there's no way that lime spirochete could ever make it to shore, correct? Well, I don't know about you, but I'm thinking a bug that weighs 1/128 of a gram in 120 mile an hour wind probably got there in about 10 seconds. You know? And then in the early 70s, any of you guys ever remember the word Lyme arthritis? 1970s, east coast of the US. And why did they call it Lyme arthritis? Because these 7, 8, 10-year-old kids was getting arthritis-like symptoms in their joints. And guess what town they were from? Lyme, Connecticut. And guess what town's off 20 miles from Plum Island? But anyway, we've got ourselves in a heck of a pickle with this. Monkeying with the Creator's work, we shouldn't be doing it. And I'm pretty positive this Ebola they're talking about now has probably been monkeyed with by our scientists too. It's an escapee. And I can't say I have a cure for it because they'll arrest me. But I think I got a cure for it. Good. Yeah. Well, they're actually working with some of our medicine. They found that tobacco is really hard on them. But I've developed a medicine with tobacco and Anua, which is a herb, and red wormwood. I think it'll take it out. I did not say that. Now, in our tradition, as any of you who happen to sign up for healings tomorrow, I keep a little talk on as I find out what's going on with people. In my grandma's day, when I was a little boy, she would have healings. Sometimes they would take 4 or 5 days. And they would have drummers and chanters. They'd be jumping around and singing. And the people were watching them as she's shaking rattles and doing all that. What I discovered by the time I was probably about 17 or 18, I said, Grandma, you're just getting people out of the way so we can work on them. She says, very perceptive young fella you are. Energy is a big, big part of healing. I like that the New Agers say, we discovered this stuff you can help people. It's called energy. Oh, God knew, eh? We've been using it for thousands of years. It's a good thing. It's not our energy, though. See, people get confused. The healers get confused that they're doing the healing. The healing comes from the Creator. I just channel and send it on. At my fair that I have up home, I've sometimes done 30 healings in a day. People say, well, how can you do that? And it's because I'm not. Creator is, you know. I once gave a school down here in Chicago there was 20 people, Reiki people. Anybody here Reiki? The 20 Reiki instructors. And I showed them that I could do it all 20 of them in one day because I don't use my energy. It's a good thing to teach your people is to stay out of the Creator's way and let Him do the work. It's a really good thing to do because Creator can do anything. I'm living proof of that. Or maybe I'm dead proof and just don't know it yet. Maybe I'm in the twilight zone, who knows? Now, a lot of the stories you're going to hear in these books come from way back. I started writing stuff down in notebooks probably in the 60s, 63, 4. I mean, you know how hard it was for you to understand my writing? You should see me trying to transcribe that written stuff I wrote when I was 10, 11 years old. What the heck was I saying there? But God bless Sharon. Because my grandmother taught me English in Indian speak, as you might have noticed, huh? in my books, when she was helping me work on this book here, you'd have to read all the way to the end to figure out what was going on in the sentence, huh? But that's the way that I learned as a child, Native Americans, that's the way you do it, you know. She was a great one for saying, to town we go. You know, subject first, actions later. So sometimes we'd have questions before we got clear to the end, didn't we? That's all good. It's and there's a, when you guys purchase the book, there's a lot of lessons in it. You're going to read it once, and you're going to get stuff out of it. But when you go back and read it the second time, you're going to be looking at it with a new set of eyes, and you're going to get more stuff out of it. When you go back and read it the third time, your perspective is going to keep changing on you as you come to understand more and more about the book. So it's a worthwhile thing. It's the lessons that my grandmother taught me to be who I am. Heal yourself first. You know, we have a, in our way, we have a, what we call the spiral of life. Anybody ever heard of that? Well, you have, I know you have. In our way, the spiral of life is heaven's not a flat place like we think of it. It's a series of plateaus. It goes around, 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 up and up and up. And on that series of plateaus, each one of those plateaus is a life. And every plateau, we sign up for a set of lessons. I mean, like, I don't know what I was thinking this time. I signed up to be a point man of Vietnam. I signed up to have cancer four times. What was I thinking? Of course, I think I signed up to survive four times, so maybe that was the good part of it. But what we do is we're on this plateau, and we've discovered what lessons we need. And on each plateau, there's a river runs down, drops down, a waterfall to the next one, and down and down and down and down and down and down and up and up and up and up. And what we do is we study the lessons that we got with our spirit guides, and they say, okay, you can move up, you go to the next plateau. Then you get your new lessons. And the spirit guide will say, you need this, 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 and this. Plus these three you forgot last time. Okay. To get these lessons, you have to be born to this man and this woman at this time. And so when the appointed time comes by, you leave the spirit land, you wade out into the river, and you wade across to the far side. You drink from this river as you go, come back. And you go across the river, and when you get to the far bank, you're never dry because you step from that river into the bag of waters you're born into, whoever's going to be your mama. Imagine that. And I thought, oh, this is really cool. Grandma's telling me. And so we evolve and we evolve and we evolve as we go. And eventually we hit the line of demarcation called attainment, I guess is what the New Agers would call it now, you know? And when you make attainment, you don't need any more lessons. So then we don't have to come back, right? No, we got to come back. It's like being in the military. You start out as a private and you work your way up to chief master sergeant of the service, right? That's as high as you can go. Well, that's the attainment line. On the other side of that line is the O1s, the O2s, the O3s. That's second lieutenants, first lieutenants, captains, majors, light colonels, full colonels, generals. Before we don't have to come back, we've got to come back and teach lessons. What lesson could a three-hour-old baby learn when he crosses over? He couldn't. He's here to teach a lesson. Maybe to the mother, maybe to the grandmother, maybe to somebody outside the family, but they're there for a reason. Same thing when kids get a little older, 5, 6, 7 years old, and they cross in a street where there's an unmarked intersection where there should have been a marked intersection. They get hit and killed. The child chose to do that for the safety of the city, the children in the city. So he'd be like a second or first lieutenant. later on they come back as young people getting killed in car accidents because of some safety feature that wasn't there, or a construction accident because some rule wasn't there. And as we come back to teach more and more lessons, you've got to be a pretty big spirit, I think, to do that, because the lessons seem to be harder and harder and harder as they do on. I mean, imagine the people were on that plane and 911. We all sign up for whatever it is we have. I know next time I'm not signing up for cancer anymore. I had my fill. That attainment thing, when I was young, I couldn't grasp that. I said, well, why would a baby sign up to come back and die? I mean, even though she said it's about lessons, I couldn't understand the lessons that would be in that, but now I see it much differently. It's not like right or wrong, there just is. I signed up for a few car accidents too. Never my fault, thank goodness. But I told about 3 or 4 cars, people hitting me. Made myself a target maybe when that's what I signed to the contract. I'm going to be a target this time. Now the path that I walk, I don't call it a religion. I call it a way of being. It's a path we walk. It's a spiritual path where we walk in the best manner that we can possibly think of every day. Help as many people as we can every day. I really go out of my way to be nice to people, don't I?
Yes.
Okay. Good answer. As we all should. Like I said earlier, all the Creator wants for us is to love and help each other. Is that in the book?
I'm sure it is.
Yeah. It's when we were building the basement. I'll tell you guys a little story out of the book. I was building my house. My spirit guide led me to the land, and it wasn't. I told him it wasn't for sale, and he said, "You go tomorrow, take your wife." And sure enough, when I drove up, the guy just pounded a for sale sign in and was driving off. So I got out of the car and threw it in the ditch. I said, "Come on, honey, we're going to go walk over this hill." And we went back to the land. And she says to me, "We're not buying it." I said, "Well, why not? This is beautiful land." She said, "It makes my hair stand up. I don't want no land that makes my hair stand up." So I took her home, went to town, paid cash for it. And eventually I built the house. But it was really a funny deal. Spirit guide said, the house has to be right here, and you're going to have a garden in the middle of the house right here, because there was a little burial mound there. Only 8 or 10 people, 11 people in it maybe. And so I put all of these stakes up. My house got a lot of jig-jogs in, because I designed it when I was in a fit of PTSD. Earlier back when I got back from Vietnam, and I couldn't sleep a lot. I figured if I can't work and I can't sleep, I'll design stuff. So I designed this house, you know, and it was way before he led me over to the land. I had to design the house before he'd take me to the land, because it's the only house in the world that would save that burial mound, because they had proposed to put a highway through there, and they'd went right through it. So anyway, I laid this house out and went home, played with the kids for a little while, and I was tired and went to bed. About midnight, my spirit guide shakes my shoulder, wakes me up, said, "You got to move the house." I said, no, I put the house exactly where he said. No, you got to move the house. I said, no, I'm not moving the house. I said, I put it exactly where he said, you're going to move the house. And I said, okay, I'll move the house. I went to sleep, went over, and he told me I had to move it one step that way. So I went over, I moved every stake, measured out 3 feet, and I moved them. 150 stakes in this house, so I moved them all. But when I was squaring up the, because it's two independent squares, and I guess I pulled it off a little bit, one way or the other when I did it, so. Did the same thing, went home, played with the kids, went to bed, shake me again, said, hey, you gotta move the house. I said, I moved the house today. I did, I moved it, just like you said, 3 feet that way, so you gotta move it. 2 steps that way. I said, I moved that house. He said, nope, you're going to move that house? And I'm not moving that. He said, you're going to move that house. And I thought, if I'm going to get any sleep here, I better agree to move that house. So I said, okay, I'll move the house. And then he left. And I went back and I measured 6 feet this way, all the way. So I went home the next night, right? Played with the kids, went to bed. I can't go to sleep. Where is he? I thought for sure that he was going to come wake me up, but eventually I fell asleep and he never did wake me up. So I called the digger the next day and he come and dug the basement out, you know, and he was digging along and he had one of them lasers and I was holding the stick for him, you know, and beep, beep, beep. He had the depth just right and he was about halfway through it, right beside that mound. And we'd cut into the side of it about that much. And when he backed up, the ground rumbled, and this much dirt about that high up fell down. And guess what? A thigh bone rolled out. And the guy's in this great big huge backhoe with this two and a half yard bucket on it, and he's on wobble sticks, and he turned sideways to me and said, "That ain't a deer bone, is it?" And not knowing, I said, No, that's buffalo or elk. It's too heavy to be a deer bone. So I took my tobacco and I did a prayer and I sprinkled tobacco on the bone. I put it up on the bank. And anyway, as I finished the basement, I called my crew in. We laid the block up Saturday. And Sunday we had about 6 or 8 blocks. I had one guy come back and we finished laying up the doorway. Well, then I needed to put the floor on. So I put all the joists up, but there's a span about from here to that second row of chairs. I put a plank across, but that 3/4 ply was really heavy, so I decided I had a bar right up the road from my house. I went up to the bar and I said, any you guys working and not working? And a couple of guys said, yeah, we're not working. I said, well, you know where they're digging right down here? I said, that's my house. I said, I got to put some 3/4 tongue of groove on. If you guys want some work, I'll put you to work for a day. And so they came and they wanted to go have a beer at lunch. I says, no, you're not leaving. I packed you guys a lunch. There's pop in here. You're not going back to the bar because if you do, I know I'll never see you again. So we were eating lunch and we had a little radio with the D-cells in. I was playing a country and western song. I think Achy Breaky Heart, if I remember correct. In the middle of the song, the radio stopped. This voice came out and said, hello, this is God. I want you to tell people to love and help each other. It's not about the business or religion. And I looked at them guys and I said, did you guys hear that? I said, yeah, that message ain't for us. We're going back to the bar. So that's where I got that from. All God wants for us is to love and help each other. I love you all very much.
Russell, your grandmother had a saying, if I remember, about walking in love or walking in fear.
Mm-hmm.
And can you talk about that and relate it to your experience in Vietnam?
Well, when I was in Vietnam about a month, I'd been a radio man. I was carrying the radio. And as I carried the radio, I decided it was heavy and they kept shooting at me. Take out the radio operator. I didn't like that. So I talked to my sergeant and I said, Sergeant, is there another job I can have? And they said, well, the only job is Jamaica's going home. Jamaica was a black guy with an English accent. I said, Jamaica, where are you from? He said, well, I'm British, of course. Anyway, he was going home, so they had me walk point with him. He said, well, the only job's walking point. I said, I can do that. I didn't realize that the first guy probably got shot at a lot more than the RTO, but anyway. So he left, and I'm walking point the first day, and the sergeant's on my back. You got to hurry up. You want to walk point? Get up here. I said, I'm doing as fast as I can. And that night, we got done doing our hump, and my grandmother came to me in my sleep, and she says, Russell, what are you doing? And I knew what she was talking about. I said, Graham, they're using real bullets and mines here to blow my leg off. And she says to me, who's in charge of how long you live? And I said, well, the Creator is. And she said, that's right. She said, let's say a week from today, next Thursday, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, your number's up and you're going to Spirit Land. She said, you're going to spend the next 7 days worrying about it, or you can enjoy the last 7 days. You guys, I guess I'll enjoy the last 7 days I got, because, if that's all I got, that's all I got. She said, then you start walking in love. My grandma's great saying was, you can walk in love or you can walk in fear. Well, I was walking point in fear. So the next afternoon was my turn to walk point again. And my machine gunner, Tiny, he was 6'5", about 260, 70. He walked to second in point with me, and I'm walking up a trail, and think of this building away. I saw this rope going across the thing. I said, come here. I said, you see that tripwire there? And he said, you're nuts. There ain't nothing over there. So I said, stay here. And I walked up about 10 feet from him. I said, come here. And here it was, a little tripwire. But to me, it looked like a rope going across the trail. And I said, hey, this walking in love has got something to it. So that's why, that's what can happen when you walk in love rather than in fear. I never fear for anything, because I know that the Creator will always provide.
Russell, this may seem like a bizarre question, but when you said you work through the energy of God, mm-hmm. what are you thinking about?
Well, actually, I'm not really thinking of anything. I'm paying attention to the energy that the Creator's showing me and trying to hear what He's telling me. I really concentrate, and also what I see. I can actually... The Creator actually shows me to a DNA level with my third eye what's going on with people. That's one of the reasons I've had about 748 cancer clients now, and I'm 99% successful yet, or 98.6, which isn't too bad. I compare that to any doctor.
Russell, could you please explain the four medicines?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry, because I was here to talk about original medicine anyway, wasn't I? Now, I told you about the Creator making the people, right? He made the heart box for us to store hurts, pains, and traumas in for a few days, and then we're going to let it go, right? But like I said, that was before we found out we earned this, we're going to hang on to her. We're not going to let it go. So He breathed life into those. Into the first eight people there, the different colored people. And guess what the first thing we did as a speaking species? Anybody? Just take a wild guess. We started whining. We need light so we can see, and dark so we can sleep, and we need to know what is food and what is medicine, and where does shelter come from, how do we stay warm in the winter, you know, and all of these things. You know, I mean, for cramity's sakes, where's the 7-Eleven? You know, all these questions we had, and the Creator said, listen, you're my children, I love you. I've given you free will, let no one take that away from you, as I will not. And that's a very important fact, because it's in part of the fire ceremony. But first and foremost, I'm going to give you four medicines. He said, the first medicine I'm going to give you is tobacco. He said, when you pray, you hold your tobacco up as an offering to me, and then I know you have a good mind and a good heart. So if you don't hold your tobacco up, I might not hear you. He said, the second medicine, or no, this is the first medicine, is sage. Purify yourself first. And you'll find this. We do healings that will be using sage, probably outside. But the third medicine you give us is sweetgrass. You give us the sweetgrass because... He says, my children, you know a lot, but you don't know everything. When you have a question of importance, he says, you light your sweetgrass, make four circles with it, and think your thought to me. And he said, I'll send an angel, a good spirit, to bring you the answer. But be aware, you have to pay attention, because I have a lot of kids, and I can't hand deliver it. And if you don't get it, say la vie. And then, of course, the last medicine He gave us his white cedar. Pretty stuff, ain't it? Smells good too. He said, white cedar, he said, because I've given you free will, there's going to be those of you who don't believe in me. And it's okay, I'm still going to love you. But you may not believe in me. So for those of you who do, he says, put a sprig of this over your door. It'll keep the confused spirits out. He says, later on, you're going to be eating things that's not good for you. They're going to constipate you. He says, you get constipated. He said, you take a sprig twice as big as this and boil it in 2 quarts of water and then drink a cup, but have some patience.
Can you tell me the significance of the eagle's wing?
Well, the eagle, in my way, is the messenger. So when you have a whole wing, when we're smudging, it's very powerful symbol for clearing energy, clearing negative energy especially, and for sending the prayers up. Because I have a constant prayer in the back of my mind, always going on. It's how I keep my direct line with the Creator while I'm doing healing. It's how I find out stuff, and the feathers always help.